Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Friends, and welcome to this edition of the Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am your co-host, Paul Hudrick, and I am joined by Seamus Clancy, who was in Washington, D.C. this past weekend to see your Philadelphia Eagles rough up the Washington Commanders. Final score of 24-8. We all know they got after Carson Wentz, sacked them 9 times. A lot of that feels like it's on Carson Wentz himself. Great performance from Jalen Hurts. Great performance by Skinny Batman. You were there. You got the vibe of the fans, the one article. And I actually, the one thing I want to ask you, your opinion on this, because I think this is sure. I think I'm onto something here. We, like Philadelphians and people in this area, to say frig, I feel like that is very like, that's like a.
I say frig all the time.
Right. But that, I feel like that's not a thing that everyone does. Like,
I don't think that's a real thing anywhere else.
No, that's what I'm saying. I feel like that is a Philadelphian thing to not use friggin and to use frig. Like, but I saw that quote and that woman just seems fantastic. But you were there. What were the vibes like? And, you know, your first experience covering a road game, correct?
Yeah, well, I will clarify. I was in Landover, Maryland, not Washington, D.C. The Eagles are the only team that play in the place where they say the team is from. Dallas Cowboys playing in Arlington, Texas. The New York Giants don't even play in that state, let alone New York City itself. So I was in Landover, Maryland. Not a terrible drive. I was expecting it to be like this disaster of a drive. I left crack of dawn. I'm just a really anal person.
I get it.
Wanted to get there early. Was interviewing some fans. I left maybe 6:50-ish from my place in Philadelphia in the city. Got there probably around a little before 9. I really had a nice quick trip down there. Was blazing. And the way back, I thought I was going to get hammered. But I did a story after Wentz's press conference. We could talk about that after the game. So by the time I got out of there, it was, again, 2 hours and 7-ish minutes home from Maryland, and I couldn't have asked for anything better.
No, with that. That's pretty good but, for your first experience too. I mean, hey,
yeah, normally you got a win. It was, you could pre-write everything because the game was over at halftime. So final whistle blew. I had 2 stories hit publication right away. That's the, I'm not that level yet, but that's the cranky old sports writer's dream, right? Like, oh, I got to rewrite my recap, like that whole shtick. Didn't have to worry about that.
I've been that cranky beat writer before, yeah.
Yeah. No, so have I. I've definitely been there too, but it's been nice since that I haven't been doing this type of immediate Eagles game is over published content thing ever really before this season. It just so happens first 3 games pretty handily controlled most of the game. Detroit game was a little iffy, but the Eagles still held on to that one. So been good so far. I will say, I did a little article interviewing some Eagles fans before there about the Carson Wentz experience. Definitely an Eagles takeover. I would say, from what I could see in the first level at FedEx Field, and I will say this, I was expecting the worst view in the history of professional sports. Like, I couldn't see a damn thing. I thought it was fine, to be honest. Yeah. I really thought I wasn't in the stadium. I will say, if you check out my TikTok, there's a video directly in front of me where some sort of toilet sewage water is pouring on someone's seat. So while it didn't distract my view and I didn't have any poop water coming on me, so to speak, it was fine otherwise.
What a poverty franchise.
First level, lower bowl, probably 50-50, maybe 60-40 Washington. But I was told up top, which I couldn't get a glimpse of or necessarily hear of, it was about 70-30 Birds fans.
Wow.
And you could feel it when the Eagles ran out of the tunnel. Obviously, they didn't do player introductions. There were more cheers than boos. And when the Washington players got introduced, teams typically introduce one side of the ball to starters on either defense or offense. Washington, in a rare smart move, announced all the defensive starters rather than their offensive starters because they knew their quarterback that they just acquired this offseason was going to get booed in his home stadium because it was an Eagles takeover.
It's so wild. It's so wild. It's such that franchise, man. Like, what
this
the hell?
This is the way I said it, too. I had a tweet. Third and 23, Wentz is already falling apart.
The crowd's cheering, right?
They're doing a silent count in their own stadium in week three. False start. Stadium erupts in cheers when their home team had a false start on third and 23. It says a lot about the special quality of this Eagles team, the way people are buying in, the way people are buying into Jalen Hurts, this new offense, what Jonathan Gannon's been doing on defense, and certainly what we've known for both of our whole lives, how special the Philadelphia fan base is.
Absolutely. Especially Eagles fans, the nuttiest of the nuttiest, and I say that with all affection in the world. I guess we'll start with Wentz because that's where we go here, because I definitely want to touch on Hurts and how terrific he was again. But Wentz gets sacked 9 times, as I mentioned, several times, I would say at least half of them were of his own doing. Pretty rough. But nonetheless, as you mentioned, great day for Jonathan Gannon's defense. 2 weeks in a row, really, where their defense has been very, very good.
Jonathan Gannon's going to drop the, a lot of people wrote me off, but I didn't write back line.
I don't know that he's that.
He did say he did drop a little bit of energy that I didn't see. I did not go. So recording this Tuesday, early, late afternoon, the Eagles did have a coordinator only press conference. The locker rooms weren't open. So Michael Clay, special teams coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, defensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, offensive coordinator, all spoke. I wasn't there, but Jonathan Gannon said something like, I forget what it was, but he was like, he was walking up the stage and said, write that. And it was pretty sweet.
Spicy. Yeah. Okay.
And spicy.
I love it.
We talked about it after week one. He was definitely on the hot seat and Eagles fans were calling for his job. And if the way we were thinking about that Vikings game, I thought the Vikings could have put up 40 points on them. The way they played in week one and how anemic the pass rush looked. But man, he rebounded. He rebounded like Nick Sirianni did last season after the 2-5 start, the blooming flower comments. Jonathan Gannon, what is he on a path to being a head coach again? That was his trajectory in the offseason. Got some. Then we were thinking, oh, he's a defensive coordinator for Bishop Eustace next year. And now he's probably going to go coach the Texans.
Terrific. But I mean, you just have to give the guy all the credit in the world because, we were both sitting here. I was trying to keep an open mind. You and I definitely both weren't in the after week one, like fire the guy. Like we definitely weren't there at all, even close. And the one thing I said after week one, and I think it's kind of come to fruition a tad, is the defensive guys didn't really have a preseason, especially their veteran guys, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave. These guys, even Hassan Reddick, like they didn't have a real preseason where they could get in the form. Tackling was an enormous issue against Detroit. Really has not been an issue at all the last 2 weeks. They've tackled very well. They've gotten out of after the quarterback. It was good to see Hassan Reddick have a breakout game. Fletcher Cox obviously had a breakout game, even though, Wentz did them an awful lot of favors. they were very dominant. Covered well. I'm still blown away.
Maddox, the number 6 corner, every Tuesday this season, I start doing some PFF grades on PhillyVoice.com. Rounding up today, 3 weeks in the season, Avonte Maddox, number 6 cornerback in the NFL per Pro Football Reference. We have at number 17, Darius Slay, and I believe number 24, James Bradbury. He's 26, not 24.
And that's what I wonder is how many teams can boast that, because, in this day and age, that they're all starting corners.
Team has 3 starting corners now. It's a lot different. It's not like you're a top 60 guy. It doesn't work that way anymore.
Right.
That's calling it up now. Let's see.
3 guys in the top 26. How many teams even have 2?
Okay. Going to cornerback right now. Looking to people up here. Jonathan Jones from the New England Patriots, number 1 right now. Jalen Ramsey from the Rams, number 3. J.C. Horn, The Panthers number 4. Bengals. The Bengals have 2 guys in the top 16.
Okay.
And the Rams have 2 guys in the top 19. But no one has 3.
So
the Ravens have 2 guys in the top 21. Or top 24, I should say. Yeah, no one has 3.
That's so in this moment, the Sixers have, or the Sixers, wow. See where my brain is. The Eagles have the best cornerback trio in the NFL.
You could say that. You could make that case, I think.
Wild. Why? Because
I love the way they've used Avante Maddox as a blitzer, too. The way people said, oh, it's such a, I guess, like a regressive Philly sports take, the curmudgeon take, oh, we need to blitz more. But then sometimes you're like, well, they actually probably should blitz more. And I think the last 2 weeks they've done that. And I love the way that Jonathan Gannon is deploying Avante Maddox all over the field. I really liked him and his had a fill in at safety as a rookie in the 2018 season.
Yeah.
Did that well. Really struggled as an outside cornerback the next 2 years. I think he was truly miscast in that role. Moved back into the slot. I think he was the number 26th cornerback in PFF last year. And that's not among slot cornerbacks. That's all cornerbacks. And now is responding where they have the best quarterback trio since 2005, 2006, I guess. Remember the peak was you had Bobby Taylor, Troy Vincent, and then Al Harris,
yeah,
cornerback, where those guys are all 3 Pro Bowl level guys. I know that they had Lito and Sheldon after that. That's certainly, I think, it's comparable to Slay and Bradbury. I might give the nod to them. I think Slay might be the better of the 4. But Bradbury's probably the worst of the 4.
Yeah, just the fact that this is even a conversation.
That we even have to have this conversation.
Right. It's wild.
TJ Edwards, the number 3 linebacker on PFF right now. I wrote today on Philly Voice, when's the last time the Eagles had a good linebacker that was age 26 or younger? TJ Edwards is 26. I said Jeremiah's Trotter's 2001 season.
Right.
It's been over 20 years since the Eagles have had, I'm not just talking about like an all-pro or a Pro Bowl guy. I'm just saying a good young linebacker. And this guy was undrafted and in the 2019 season, built his way up, has the best camp of any Eagles player and carried that over into the season.
To now have this cornerback trio, when this team has struggled, as we indicated, the fact that we're talking about Lito, Shepherd, and Sheldon Brown, that shows you how the dearth of talented corners they've had. To now have this trio, arguably the best in the NFL, to now have, you know, all these years of never having good linebacker play, to now having, you know, TJ Edwards and Kaiser White has been no slouch either. He's played pretty darn well, too.
I think he's been great, yeah.
Yeah, CJ Gardner-Johnson seems to be, I feel like he's been better each week.
He was on the field all 77 of the defensive snaps, or 70 or 77 of the defensive snaps against Washington. He's been out there. He didn't grade well in PFF, but I wrote in that article, PFF's fun when it fits your narrative, and it's not fun when it doesn't. Yeah. So this isn't a slight to CD at all, who I think's played well, and even Marcus Epps. That is a really strong 5 there, where there doesn't appear to be a really clear weak link the way – you know, even in the past when they have had some successful defenses.
Last season. Has been. I mean, geez.
What's the weakest part of this Eagles roster? The punter is the weak link on the roster. Sip-offs, if the punter is your worst player,
you're in good shape.
You're in a hell of a good spot.
Yeah. Yeah. I would even make, you could maybe say, like, if we're taking the punter out of it, like maybe running back, but even that would be like Miles Sanders is having a pretty good year to start. I mean, they couldn't really get it going on the ground against Washington. Front is pretty good.
Yeah, they have some talent. They have some big names.
They're pretty good. So I wasn't super shocked they couldn't get it going on the ground. But Jalen Hurts, man.
They don't need to get on the ground if he's throwing like that, right?
Dude, I'm going to say this. And like, I can't. It's week 3 and I'm totally overreacting. And I don't care who knows it. Give him the extension. Do it. Do it now. Get it done.
Get it done.
Get it done. Just get it done. Don't care what it takes. Do it, Howie. Get it done. Get in the extension. I'm in. I am, the play has been the one thing, but then I saw the post game speech. I just saw it this morning. I hadn't seen it until today. I would run through a brick wall for Jalen Hurts. I absolutely would. Like to have, and I was at Sixers Media Day yesterday talking to some other people and we were talking about the Eagles, you know, it came up amongst other my other colleagues. And it's, I think about Jalen Hurts and I think about the Eagles quarterbacks. They've had some really good quarterbacks, like no doubt about it. But a quarterback this likable and that just really embraces the role and is such a good leader and embraces the city, like, respectfully, Carson Wentz, as good as he was, you know, during 2017 when he looked like the MVP of the league, just it was clear he never really embraced everything, right? And like the stories of his leadership, and I won't get into all that, but like that's out there, and there's a reason why this guy's on his third team in 3 years and struggling again. Donovan McNabb, for all his greatness, you know, there was always a weird thing with him and the fans. I somewhat understood it because of the whole draft night, you know, getting booed and all that, but
totally.
But I thought at some point that's got to dissipate because, you know, and there's a weird dynamic, I feel like, with Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia. Despite him being the greatest quarterback in the franchise's history, there's still a weird dynamic there. And then Michael Vick, again, so talented, so good.
And he got him too late in his career. He was 30. If Andy gets him at 22, 23, he is
he's Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. Correct, right. Jeff McLean had that really good article in the Inquirer about the fact that, which is a really cool stat that I didn't even think of, but makes a lot of sense. The Eagles have had more starts from black quarterbacks than any team in the NFL ever, which is wild.
Well, I think just playoff starts in my head, they have Randall, Rodney Pete,
yeah,
Donovan, Vick, now Hurts. That's just playoff start. That's five different black quarterbacks to do that. That's wild. And hats off for the Eagles for realizing probably a lot of teams over the last, you know, the history of football, really, for horrific reasons, kind of shooed black quarterbacks out of that role. I mean, like, if Jalen Hurts is, I mean, I think back to Randall was a second round pick in 1985. And he was the first guy to really do all this type of shit, running around, being this amazing player. I couldn't imagine what he would be if he got drafted in 2022. He'd be like, everyone's tanking for 2 years to get a guy that stylistically.
Shoo-in, unbelievable number one pick. Yeah, right. Like absolutely number one pick.
And then you think about all those guys that probably were forced to change positions as you know, high as high school or college. That could have been elite NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, there's that. If you didn't see that article about McLean, he wrote it before the season. It's really, really good. And he talked to Michael Vick. He talked to Randall Cunningham about Hurts and about that idea. And Jordan Reed, who wrote a really good book on the topic, talked to Ray Dinger, who put it in. Really, like, it's a really good read. And but just all this to say, man, like this is the guy you want leading your franchise. Like everything about him. And now the fact that he. Like, I will never bet against this guy. I will never bet against him. You know, I going into the season, I was unsure, like, frankly, and I've said that a couple times here, but I'm all in. Give him the damn extension right now. Do it.
The passing ability has caught up to the mobility, the intangibles, and the vibes. And that's a scary proposition for the rest of the NFC.
Especially the NFC East after watching that dreck of Monday Night Football we all got exposed to. Oh my goodness.
Here's a Hurts stat in terms of how we should be viewing him as a passer, the way we viewed some other Eagles quarterbacks who were on the rise as passers. Jalen Hurts, last two games, Minnesota throws for 333 yards. At Washington, throws for 340 yards. And if that was a game that was actually close in the second half, he easily eclipses 400, I think. Carson Wentz's 2017 magical season should have, would have been MVP, could have been MVP. Top that mark twice, both losses.
Hmm.
That's how we should be viewing Jalen Hurts right now. He's third in MVP odds, or second, I should say, this week.
Yeah.
He was third last week. He's on DraftKings Sportsbook, wrote about it this week behind just Josh Allen, who I'm assuming is probably going to end up winning the award. But the case I made for Hurts this week on Philly Voice was, if this team wins 14 games with this terrible schedule that's in front of them in this weak division and weak conference, the narrative's there is this redemption story of this guy who seems to be counted out at every level, keeps getting a little bit better every year, has the national championship game debacle to Alabama in the 2017 season, gets benched for Tua, rides the pine next year, gets transfers to Oklahoma, balls out, has 5,100 total yards of offense, I think 52 total touchdowns. gets drafted by the Eagles. If fans and Carson Wentz alike are angry about the pick, then he usurps the guy a couple months later as the starter. They want to have a new quarterback in the 2021 season. You know, fans and the team alike are trying to upgrade. He does good enough, leads into that stretch late in the year, unlikely playoff berth. Same conversation this offseason. Are they going to upgrade from him? Some fans want them to. I think the organization legitimately tried to make moves for someone else and it didn't necessarily come to fruition. And they are lucky that those moves didn't come to fruition with the way that Hurts is playing right now, given his age, given his developmental curve, and especially before we give him this gigantic contract extension, his very cheap day two contract that he's playing through right now in his rookie deal.
And drafted to be a backup. Like Howie Roseman, when he drafted Jalen Hurts, did not envision him becoming the franchise quarterback, right? He viewed Jalen Hurts as a cheap backup quarterback solution. He did not view this guy as a franchise quarterback. It reminds me a little bit, and listen, Jalen Hurts is not there yet. We got a long way to go. But it's a little bit like Giannis. When the Bucks drafted Giannis Antetokounmpo, they didn't know what he was. He was this tall, lanky kid from Greece. They had no idea what he was. They didn't think he would be this good. And maybe the Eagles can have their kind of guy like that they get really lucky where they don't draft him to be that guy, but then he turns into that. And I would just be wonderfully tickled if that were the case.
The best case scenario for Jalen Hurts when they drafted him is that he doesn't have a single throw in his Eagles career.
Yep.
A little over 2 years later, best case scenario for him is riding down a float down Broad Street.
Yep. Go franchise. I mean, it wouldn't be crazy to say franchise savior at this point. Considering we all, like you said, everyone was ready to move on. Everyone was ready looking for the upgrade. Ah, can they get Russell Wilson? Ah, some people, can they get
Aaron Rodgers? They dodged a gigantic bullet. The Eagles wanted Russell Wilson. Yeah. They tried to get Russell Wilson. And they are so lucky they didn't and handed them that $235 million contract.
I'll say this. I do think Russell Wilson would be having much more success here with Sirianni and Steichen and with this offensive line and these receivers and running game. I feel like he would be having much more success than in Denver, and it is only three games. But to your point, they did make it. They lucked out in that it was better to hang on to your assets, see what Jalen Hurts has, and he is making that decision look really, really smart. The other thing I have to touch on, because something that really, if you and I tugging at our heartstrings, this whole swole Batman, skinny Batman thing. AJ Brown catches that beast mode touchdown on that slant, puts the friggin' cape on. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, I need no reason to love AJ Brown more. He scores a touchdown and puts on a friggin' Batman cape. Oh my God. And then we go on, and Devontae Smith. James, remember when everyone freaked out because he didn't have a catch in week one? I think he's fine.
Seems about 35 years ago, Paul.
Yeah, I know. I think we're okay there. We're at a point. This team has two number one receivers. This is 1A, 1B. This is like flat out.
They will have two guys that finish the season at worst, two top 15, top 12 receivers. And really, maybe two top 10 statistically. So what are their Batman comps? AJ Brown seems like souped up, maybe, I don't want to call him, because he's not old, like Dark Knight Returns ever Batman, because he's just this hulking figure.
Whereas
Devontae's like a Batman Beyond, Terry McGinnis, slithery, slim Reaper type.
Yes, and I kind of viewed that, my first thought was like the Dark Knight Returns, just because of the size, the sheer magnitude. I mean, if you're going to go movies, you could say kind of like Ben Affleck.
He's Batfleck,
you could see that. Yeah, for Quez, it's tough. I don't know, like, what Batman do we perceive?
He's like
to be
when Dick
speediest.
Grayson took over for a year when Bruce was displaced through time. That's when I first started reading Batman in single issues.
When Bruce was doing his international Batman recruiting trip thing.
Well, after Final Crisis, when he got he thought he quote unquote died and then was like stuck in like dinosaur era. And then Dick picks up the cowl and is the guy with Damian as Robin.
In this minutia thick, and we're
deep in it. I mean, it felt like they made that. They set those lines for us specifically to discuss. Right?
That's I said, dude. They're reading our diaries. It's ridiculous. It's the passing attack. And again, I think what I touched on last week was I love the fact that it was so many different receivers. This week we had what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different guys catch a pass. Quez gets 2 pass interference penalties, draws them both. Technically only has 1 target.
That counts as offense. Like that's a good rep for him. Do you know what 100%. I mean? It's not going to show up in the stat sheet, but that's a good rep for him.
Absolutely. Actually, that's not even the full picture, because what am I looking at here? Because we had Grant Calcaterra had his first catch, and it was a really nice play. That young man can play a little bit. It's a little bit.
I worry about his brain with all the concussions in a legitimate way. That I'm not in a non joking way. Like,
no, seriously,
I wondered if he should have stopped playing football.
It's fair.
My dad, who is
literally did.
My dad was a college football player. He's very unhappy that he is continuing his career. Not mad at him specifically, but more mad at the situation. There's a lot to go on.
Looking at
yards per catch, Devontae 16.6, AJ 15.5, Goddard 15.3.
Fantastic.
What a work.
This is just a deep team with a lot of weapons.
I mean, Pascal, I think he's like, you took Jalen Reagor's snaps out, gave him the Zach Pascal. Who is this? Who is this NBA comp as this pick and roll big man who's doing the dirty work and setting everyone else up for easy plays? Jalen Reagor, this isn't just a shit on Jalen Reagor podcast, but he's not doing those little things.
Yeah.
And that's where the veteran presence of him, his connection with Sirianni, his belief in team overall, he knows he's not going to be one of the top 5 guys in pass catches on this team. But he knows that if he does his little jobs, he's going to have the rest of the guys on the team looking like stars like they do. And they're going to have a playoff run.
And it's not like he's a slouch in the receiving game.
No, he's good. He would be
a number 3 on a lot of teams around the NFL. Yeah. But like you said, he wanted to come here because he had the connection with Sirianni, and he knew he had a chance to perhaps do something special here. So, yeah, just like selfless guys. I think that's such a good theme of, and I feel like there's a lot of that with this Eagles team, whether it's Hurts, whether it's AJ Brown and Devontae Smith, you know, whether it's Dallas Goedert, Miles Sanders, like. There are a lot of selfless players on this team who just want to win. They don't care who eats as long as they win games and someone eats. And they're just as happy for the other guys who do it, right? And I love that. I love that mentality. And that's how you win, when everyone puts their egos aside and does that. And I got a little bit of those vibes from the Philadelphia 76ers. And I'm going to definitely touch on that. And the media day that took place on Monday, I was there, obviously, at the training complex. But we're going to take a quick break on the Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast. We will be right back with more right after this.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Just to put a bow on this Eagles discussion, we got a fun one coming this Sunday. Doug Peterson, triumphant return. For Doug to say, oh, I really hope it's more cheers than boos. Doug, if anyone boos you, they're an idiot. Like, we can say that, right? Like, I'm a big fan of boos. Like, not big fan of boos, but like, I'm...
No, I am literally a big fan of boos.
Like, I'm personally not, but like...
I am pro-booing.
You're entitled to it, and I fully stand by that, and you do what you want to do. You paid your money, and it's fine. But in this one, this is one of the instances where if you boo the only head coach to win a Super Bowl in this franchise's history, who from all the reports that I've read, maybe you know something different than I do, but like, he was basically fired because of Carson Wentz, right? Like, that's my understanding of it, is that they were trying to keep Carson Wentz and they moved on from Doug Peterson because of that. Yeah, exactly. We are on video, so some people will see that this week. I believe that's getting posted. But yeah, good, so no, it's, I'm just saying it's wonderful. Yeah. That people can see our genuine reactions. But so all that to say, if you're booing Doug Peterson this weekend, you have to reevaluate things. It maybe personally, like maybe not just your sports fan, but maybe personally inward, you have to reflect and maybe, you know, learn a little bit of something about yourself.
Main entrance of the stadium when you walk in. You're going to walk by a statue of this guy, then go in and boom. Again, I'm not just trying to make a straw man thing. I really don't think he's going to get booed. I had a mailbag question today that I ran on Philly Voice. It was, you know, will Doug Peterson get a standing ovation? I said, anything less is completely unacceptable and embarrassing. And again, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be even something like 70, 30 cheers of booze. I don't think anyone's booing him, nor should they. But I want to get out in front and say, if you do that, just stay the hell home.
I'm with you.
Again, I'm a reporter. You know, my fandom is obvious in my history, as you know, if I wasn't such a huge Eagles fan and a nut growing up and, you know, doing that writing and podcasting before my Philly Voice job, I wouldn't be good at my job now. And I can take a step back and say, look, 27 Eagles, wasn't a media member there. Most influential thing outside of my, you know, closer inner social network in my life for a lot of reasons. And Doug Peterson, how could you not love the guy? How could you really not love the guy?
And he's just so, that's the other thing too, is like, he's just a likable guy too. Like, he's a good dude. He's Doug. Like, you know what I mean? But I'll tell you
I think the unassuming nature is what maybe rubbed some people the wrong way as the years went on. Not saying it's deserved, but they're like, oh, this guy. I think that's what kind of, maybe why he was overlooked that specific hiring cycle in 2016 when the Eagles hired him. He wasn't their first option. They wanted to hire Ben McAdoo. Yeah. Ben McAdoo turned him down, so they had to settle for the first coach to win a Super Bowl in league history. So I was writing about Doug. I'm kind of on the Doug Peterson beat this week on Philly Voice. Yeah. And I looked up some old articles about ranking coaching head hires that offseason. USA Today. I don't remember the journalist's name. I didn't cite the journalist. I'm not trying to do old takes exposed, but I'll find a dunk on a publication rather than a specific person, especially if they're national like that. So Peterson was seventh. Chip Kelly was first.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Peterson came in and cleaned up Chip Kelly's mess. This college megalomaniac coach and Jacksonville just hired him to do the same thing, clean up Urban Meyer's mess in three games in the season. Into this season, he's done that.
Yes.
Trail of Trevor Lawrence looks like the guy we thought he was going to be coming out of Clemson again. That guy was non-existent last year. They wasted his entire rookie year, year of his rookie contract. Now Doug has him on the right trajectory.
They're fun to watch too. Like and Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. You nailed it there. I absolutely love him. I love his game. I think
that was the perfect hire they could have made.
Hire. Well, and it's funny, cause we just talked about Denver and Russell Wilson. Like, why the hell would Denver not go after Doug Peterson? You have a Super Bowl winning coach.
Older coach, really, to you just threw a new guy in who's a big, big nepotism guy in the NFL coaching circles to appease Russell Wilson. I can't speak to their thought. They say, you know, is Russ more indie Peyton Manning, where he's kind of the coach in the field and they have this kind of stand-in guy in Hackett? But whatever's going on, it's not working there.
Yeah, well, the rumors were they hired Hackett to get Rodgers, right? Like, that's what kind of started.
That
was there. So I don't know if maybe they got into bed with Hackett and it was like too late to go back. Like, I don't know.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
But why they wouldn't give Doug Peterson a look, I don't know. But just to wrap up on Eagles, I guess for you, let's go with like, what are your kind of the biggest things you're looking for in the matchup, and then what your prediction is for Sunday?
Are they going to keep the pedal on in the second half?
Hmm.
Because contrary to the Vikings offense, the way that team showed up that night, not speaking to Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson as regular season players overall, but the way they performed and showed up to the link that night, their vibe was non-existent. Their presence was non-existent. Same thing kind of happened in Washington. Those guys faded right away. Couldn't wait to get out of that building. I don't think Doug Peterson's Jaguars are going to be doing that because of what this game means to Doug Peterson, the way he is as a head coach, and frankly, the kind of talent they have on that offense, young guys who want to prove themselves they belong in this team and belong in a game against this team that's already, you know, we're part of the hype train. I'm in the media. I'm part of the hype train as much as I think I'm, you know, kind of the outsider type guy. And I'm writing that Jalen Hurts won MVP. I'm part of that hype train. And people are crowning them already.
Yeah.
I play a part in that, and I think it's warranted to a degree.
NFL.com, they were number one, right? Power rankings
I'm not
today.
Saying I'm definitively going to Phoenix in February, but it just – The team is playing exceptionally right now. And I don't think the Jaguars are going to have to quit in them the way Minnesota did in Philly and the way the Commanders did in Maryland.
I'm with you.
So I don't want to just score. I don't want the Eagles to just score 24 points in the first half and then be like, cool, we'll chill. Brandon Graham will sack Trevor Lawrence once or twice. Jordan Davis will be in his face pressure him. It'll be fine. No, that's not how Doug Peterson won the Super Bowl, because the Eagles were at a double-digit lead at halftime. That's not how they won the Super Bowl. That's not how Doug Peterson played. And coming back here, you know, Doug is probably going to be very receptive and happy about the reception he's going to receive, right? He's going to be overjoyed. That seems like his nature. Wednesday morning at the Novacare Center, I'll be down there. They're going to have a conference call with Doug as kind of a opposing coach interview. Obviously, there's more energy for that given Doug standing in Philadelphia rather than, you know, Ron Rivera last week. I didn't even attend that. But I think Doug is going to be a guy who keeps going late in that game. He's going to have his guys doing that. So the Eagles need to respond. And I think Sirianni's up for that challenge, because this week's about the opposing coach in Philadelphia and what he means to Philadelphia. And Nick Sirianni's sitting there right there saying, people hated me last year. They're loving this team right now. I think we can make the Super Bowl. I think, not that he's publicly saying that, but I'm sure the expectation in the building right now is, hey, we're taking things one at a game at a time. We think we have a great team. We can make this run. Nick Sirianni's sitting there probably thinking, I want to do what this guy did here. I want to be remembered not just as good as this guy. I want to be remembered as a greater coach than this guy. So much great juice. This is such a juicy matchup. The vibes are unbelievable. These guys who kind of have different personalities, different public personas, but I think they each have a hidden edge to them that isn't really seen as much. And they have some sort of connection with the Frank Reich tree, right, too? Because obviously Frank Reich was the Eagles' offensive coordinator and they win the Super Bowl. He goes to Indianapolis, his first year in Indianapolis. Nick Sirianni becomes his offensive coordinator for the next 3 years.
And I think the one thing, because I agree with you, they are different personality-wise, but I think there's one key thing for a head coach that I believe they both have. Guys want to play for them. And that's such a huge thing for any head coach in any sport. But guys tend to, when that 2017 season, they love Doug Peterson here. Like that team rallied around Doug. And then, people were wanting to fire Doug Peterson in 2016, if you recall, like just Philadelphia in the way it is. I think
the team may have considered doing that.
Yeah, it's possible.
On the low, there was that talk of Jim Schwartz potentially taking over for him.
Remember that?
A lot of us, you know, fans called BS on it. I'm sure I did, but there might have been legitimacy there. Obviously, Doug Peterson shut those people the frig up.
The frig up. Yes. Perfect. I do. So before we wrap up on Eagles, prediction, what do you got for Sunday?
What did I do for Philly Voice this week? I think I said 27-17 or something along those lines.
Okay.
So I have them covering.
Okay.
If it's 31-28, wouldn't be shocked. Before the season, I predicted the Eagles to be going 3-0 in this game and losing the Jaguars. I am amending that pick just because of how well the Eagles have played. I thought they were going to go 3-0. Not in this dominant fashion, especially offensively with Jalen Hurts. So I'm going with the Birds now.
I'm also going to go Birds. I'm going to go 31-20, and I think the one bold prediction I'll have, it's not that bold, they're going to get one defensive touchdown this week, whether it's a Lawrence interception or a sack fumble returned. I think they get one defensive touchdown this week, and that's going to help kind of further the gap and perhaps help them create distance in the second half. Hopefully they can get the running game going, because I think that will go a long way in being a little bit more dominant in the second half and maybe, you know, closing the game out a little sooner. Little easier.
I have one bold prediction.
Go.
I don't know who it's going to be, because both of these guys like to smell themselves. And I think, like I was talking about, the energy with the matchup between who the coaches are, what they've done in the past, what they've done in the past here. There will be at least one Philly special run. I don't know which team's going to run it. Nick Sirianni infamously ran it last year in week two against the 49ers, a fourth and goal situation. And it was such a please love me pandering move. It's okay, Nick. They probably didn't love you then. They definitely love you now. And it would be very Doug for him to come back here and do that as well. So I think I do a weekly over unders feature where I'm not looking at true props. I'm kind of making up my own that usually run the day before games. So Sunday game on Saturdays on PhillyVoice.com. The one I'm going to do is over 2.5 players to attempt a pass.
Interesting.
I've seen like those that. Props. There were props like that. And like on actual sports books in 2020, when the Eagles had Hurts, there were some over under Jalen Hurts throw 0.5 when
they ran the quarterback sets,
and
yeah.
stuff like that. So,
yeah, gotcha. No, I like that bold prediction because you're right. I could see either coach doing it.
They both do it.
I was going to say,
they both do it.
Especially if they're both successful, that would be incredible.
Yeah.
Or if like, if the Jaguars try it and don't get it, and then the Eagles do, well, maybe try that's it the, and do get it. Like,
maybe that's amazing. Your defensive touchdown.
Yeah.
Christian Kirk throws an interception.
Pick six to Bradbury, and he goes the other
pick
way.
Pick six. Philly special pick six.
That would be hilarious. Very serendipitous. I want to talk about something maybe a little less exciting, but and I think we're still kind of in this apathy phase with the Philadelphia Phillies. They had a weird, you know, last weekend not this previous weekend, but the weekend before, they get swept by the Braves. They look completely outclassed. They have a weird week this week where they split with the Blue Jays, two game set. Then they split the two game set with the Braves. Zach Wheeler being back, very positive. He looked really good. They only let him go four innings, which is understandable, all things considered, but he looked great. Jose Alvarado looks like the most dominant reliever in baseball right now.
Classic 103 mile an hour sinker.
Dude, it's so wild. And that cutter now that he's throwing at like 95, that's getting guys out, become like a strikeout pitch. They do get Castellanos back. A little bit of controversy there because he is not taking a rehab assignment. So we'll see what he's got over these last 10 games, which, by the way, the Phillies do not play a home game over their final 10 games of the season, which is insane to me. I don't know what the schedule makers were thinking there. I don't really appreciate that on their part. They got the Cubs. They got the Nats. Close it up against a very good Houston team that might not have much to play for.
Hopefully, you discussed that last week, right?
Yeah. So we'll see there. But the playoff odds. According to Baseball Reference, that's where like there's a little bit of concern here because what
they drop every show. They drop
literally every show they've dropped. I'm trying to find it here. So they were, it was like 95 or 96% the first time we looked, and they are currently down to 80.9% to make the postseason. Now they're still in really good shape. Frankly,
you'd rather they be at 80 than 20, right?
Yeah, correct. Which is where the if you look at the Brewers, which is the team that could potentially catch them, the Brewers are at 26.9%. So there's that. So you feel pretty good about it. I did have this here pulled up, and I want to pull it back up. Destiny Legardo, who does a really nice job covering the Phillies for Phillies Nation,
definitely.
She has it kind of lined up of what the Phillies need to finish and then what Milwaukee would need to finish in order for the playoffs to happen. If the Phillies go 5-5, play 500 baseball, the Brewers would have to go 6-3 in order to overtake them. That means that the Phillies just go 6-4, playing two teams that are bad and have nothing to play for. The Brewers have to go 7-2. So, like, God, if you win six games, 6 of 10, it's not asking a lot. 6 or 7, that would be great. Then the Brewers would really have to really close out on an absolute tear. For you to not make the postseason, and it would really suck, and it would really be a Phillies thing to happen if that were the case. But there were some positive signs. It was, like I said, good to see Wheeler back in the mix. Kyle Schwarber heating up a little bit. Bryce Harper hitting a home run, getting back on board. Where are you at right now? Are you feeling any type of a slightly more excitement now that we're nearing the finish line here? What's kind of going through your mind when you think Philadelphia Phillies right now?
The worst thing that could have happened to the Phillies in terms of their engagement fan-wise and their stance in this city is that the Eagles are 3-0 and everyone thinks they're going to the Super Bowl. That is, we talked about it earlier. I talked about it on the show before. We've said it in other conversations with people. They needed the summer to convince the city that they were for real and not this inconsistent bunch that they've been specifically for the last 2 or 3 years. And maybe this irrelevant bunch they've been for almost a dozen years. And they weren't really able to do that. Bryce's injury looms large. I think we talked about it on last week's show where people might be attending games if at least you said, hey, Bryce is going to be in there. I know he's back in the lineup now, but during that hill stretch, he had two different stretches where he's missed a lot of time. Hey, I'm just going to go to the game, buy a Bryce jersey, drink a couple of beers, watch him hit and run. Now everyone just said, hey, I'm going to go scroll Twitter on my phone from the comfort of my living room, yeah, and the Phillies on in the background and read some articles about the Eagles. And this isn't supposed to be a me jumping on the Phillies thing. And,
no.
I'm an Eagles guy. Like, I think I'm maybe people think that. It's not the case. Like, my life as a writer in terms of business-wise for Philly Voice would be a lot better if the Phillies were a 100-win team. So that's preferable for me than the situation they're in right now.
And it's just it's a lack of that like take a draw, why
have any vivacity to them?
Yeah, like to your point, if Bryce Harper was just scalding hot right now, you would get people in the stadium. If Kyle Schwarber was hitting like he hit in June, you'd have people in the stadium right now. Any of that, you would have people in that stadium. But it's just not the case. They've had some injuries, which has been rough. I mean, you know, we talked about Wheeler, Castellanos. Sir Anthony has not been right since he came back, although he was like okay his last couple outings. The apathy is the word I keep coming back to, because it's just how I feel. And like the fact that, you know, they split with the Braves, great. But it would have just been so much sweeter if they had won 3 out of 4 after they just looked totally outclassed the previous weekend in Atlanta. So to just see them kind of not step on necks during the week, right? Like splitting with Toronto, meh. Splitting with Atlanta, meh. I mean, I get they're both good teams, but like, you just need to see, like, for me, what I need to see over these next 10 games, maybe not 10 games, but just these games over the against the Nationals and the Cubs, dominate. You have to dominate. You have to just beat these teams. Like, you have to have that killer instinct. You know, it's September. It's almost October. We just need to go in and crush these teams. They have nothing to play for. Get to them early, hop on these starting pitchers early, and score a lot of runs and make it so they don't even want to try to come back and they want to play golf.
I guess the Braves series or Cardinals series, whatever it would be, that's next Friday. So the Phillies be having a playoff game in 10 years. I don't think the average Philadelphia sports fan, I'm talking about the average Philly fan or the average Eagles fan, I'm just talking about a generic replacement level, the war
the average
version,
sure,
of,
yeah,
of a fan. Does not give a shit.
No. And it's
and what
sad.
Is that, like, does that say more about the fan base? Does that say more about this Phillies team? Does that say more about what baseball has become in the overall imagination? And that's more of a macro level view of
no,
things.
I get it. Yeah. I think you could certainly make a case that it's a little bit of all of it, right?
Because the next Sunday, the Eagles are playing the Cardinals in Arizona. And if there was a split, that's a 3-game series in whether it's St. Louis or Atlanta, whatever. That could be a 1-1, game 3, winner goes the next round of playoffs. The Phillies win that game, they're guaranteed a home playoff game.
Yeah.
If you're not in a crazy 2-TV household like me, thinking you're a bigwig, that TV is going to be on the Eagles game.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm going to have to bring the TV down. You said that. I have a TV in my office. It's coming downstairs if that's the case. But, yeah, I think a lot of it is just a lack of trust in this Phillies organization, which they have earned that lack of trust, quite frankly.
They do
from
not.
The last decade of bad baseball. I mean, that's
they do
it.
Not deserve the benefit of the doubt in the slightest.
That's right. And so I want to shift gears now to a team with a little bit more positive vibes, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. Media day yesterday. What I said, my biggest takeaway yesterday, it was boring. But I feel like for the Philadelphia 76ers, boring is wonderful. There were no rookies with injuries. There was no talking about a player who either forgot how or refuses to shoot a basketball. There's nobody on a hot seat right now. I won't mention the guy's name, but we all know who I'm talking about when I say it. A certain reporter who really is always trying to do the whole gotcha thing. He had nothing. There was nothing. There was just nothing. There's no controversy. It's boring. And I think one, the Sixers are probably elated that it's boring.
Sixers PR staff sleeping well tonight for the first time in 10 years.
Ever. To me, that's a wonderful sign that it was boring, that there was nothing much there. I was there. I'll get into some of my takeaways and some of the stuff I saw. But for you, from the outside looking in, was there anything to you that really stood out from the day or anything that really caught your attention?
Did anyone ask Doc the question?
Well, yeah. No one asked him that.
No,
but I think
they should have sent me just – I was on the tweet beat, and beat was not meant as a double entendre there.
Oh, my goodness. We're off the rails and I love it. For me, I felt more like, what is he going to say? I'm kind of over it. I want to talk about basketball personally. So I asked Daryl Morey a question. So I didn't even ask Doc a question. So that's where I was at. No, listen, I'm just saying.
I'm joking. That's your job is to ask questions.
Correct. It is my job to ask questions. And I was hoping I would get a little bit more out of Daryl Morey. I didn't. It happens. What are you going to do? But yeah, was there, other than the lack of asking about porn tweets, was there anything else that stood out to you?
Well, Kyle Newbeck had an article today come out in Philly Voice where he talks about, it seemed that they're interested in the idea of PJ Tucker getting some of those backup center minutes. What do you think about that? Do you think that's something sustainable? Is Doc Rivers receptive at all to playing small ball that way, the way he has in the last couple of seasons? Does that change in the playoffs? Are they going to have Harrell out there because of Doc's so much of his familiarity with him because of their shared days in LA? How do you see? I think people know what the starting rotation is going to be. I think they know what they're going to get from Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, James Harden, and to an extent, Tyrese Maxey, who could conceivably make another leap the way he did last year. From, I think he went from a good player to on the cusp of stardom, and who knows what this season takes for him. How old is he? 22?
21.
21.
21. It's wild. 21. It's a very similar trajectory right now to Darius Garland, who made his first All-Star team last year. So we'll see. Although the East is a little bit more loaded at guard, perhaps, than it was last year. But
how many All-Stars would the Sixers have this year?
I'm going to say two. I'm going to say it's. I'm going to say
it's the correct answer, but it's not fun.
I know. I'm going to say it's Embiid and Harden. I don't think Maxey quite gets there yet. It's one of those, and it's like they say, like, you have to have one All-Star season where you don't make it before you actually become an All-Star.
I think that's apt.
Yeah, so I think that's what happens. I think Maxey has an All-Star caliber year this year, but doesn't quite get it because all of a sudden now you have Donovan Mitchell in the East too. I mean, this is a loaded conference when it comes to guards all of a sudden. So I mean, and Tyrese Halliburton could be an All-Star this year. So there's on a team like Indiana where he's gonna shine because they have nothing. He's going to shine every night. So he's going to get the opportunity. Whereas Maxey, the wealth is going to be spread out a little bit more. So maybe he doesn't have that chance. And if the Sixers already had two All-Stars, perhaps it's not looked at as favorably. But to get back to your PJ Tucker point, the regular season, it's Harrell. It's going to be Harrell all season long. Yeah. That's just the way it's going to go. And I'm good with that because he is an outstanding regular season player. He's going to be really good with James Harden. I think he's got a chance to be really good with Tyrese Maxey. Tobias Harris is another guy who's been really good playing with lob threat type centers in the past. He has a little bit of history with Harrell too. So I think a lot of things are set up that I think Harrell's going to have a very good regular season. And I think with PJ, you don't want to go to it too much because he is 37 years old and you don't want to wear him down. The playoffs are the time to mess around and maybe do that.
Yeah, I agree.
You might see
use of him banging in January in the post when he only has so many miles on the pedometer, right?
100%.
The 3-year contract too. It's not just a 1-year deal.
Times. But I do think I think Doc will recognize the validity of how good the Miami Heat's lineups were at times with PJ Tucker. Now, again, if you're facing a center like Joel Embiid, which the Sixers will not because they do in fact employ Joel Embiid. You don't put P.J. Tucker up against him. P.J. Tucker actually had a really funny comment yesterday where he said in the past where he's guarded Joel Embiid as a center, they literally were making jokes about it while the game was going on. The fact that 6'5" P.J. Tucker was guarding arguably the best center on the planet. So in certain matchups, I think it'll make sense. I think it'll make sense to go P.J. and just go a bunch of shooters. But I will say this too. When you're doing those funky kind of lineups, you play Paul Reed in that scenario, and he's more of the five and PJ's more of the four. Like I think it's going to be matchup dependent. I think Doc will mess around with it. I want to see it. And I want to see it like in the postseason, especially when other teams go small, I would love to see the chess move be, all right, you're going to go small. Here's PJ Tucker at the five. And it's, you know, five shooters on the floor. We're switching everything. I would love to see that, you know, Tucker at the five, you know, maybe Tobias at the four, and then playing
off
like,
the
know,
floor and shoot
Melton, Matisse, and like Maxey or something like that, and just switch everything. And I think that could be a really interesting lineup. So Yeah, I mean, Doc was pretty close to the chest, didn't really reveal too much about what he likes and what he doesn't like.
Seems normal.
Yeah.
What do you think of how long – what's the playoff rotation? How many guys do you think are in a playoff rotation? Obviously, you have 82 games to figure that out.
Yeah.
And who are those guys in your minds?
Nine-ish. I would say – I'd say the starting five is the starting five. You have Melton. You have House. I think are locks to be the two guys off the bench. Then into that, like – I don't know if Harold, it's one of like Harold or Reed is going to have to play backup center, I think. So that's eight. And then nine is going to be, I think it's like,
hey, Ferk, open, are you, do you have a pulse? Let's go out there.
Yeah. Or Matisse, like that type Dybul. Stuff. Listen, yeah. I even think Doc Rivers still really likes Shake Milton a lot. And Shake Milton talked like a guy who thinks he's going to get rotation minutes this year.
Okay.
I don't know that that's a thing. I don't know if that's going to happen, but Shake came in pretty confident. I still just think Shake's a pretty good basketball player. He had a tough year last year, was really nicked up. Doc said he thought he had the best training camp of anybody, and then he twisted his ankle and you know, missed the start of the season. I still think Shake Milton can be a pretty good basketball player. So I'm curious. What I'd say is what's good about this conversation we're having is the conversation we had last year was, oh my God, do they have five guys who can play in the playoffs? Now it's like, hey, they might have 7, 8, 9, 10 guys that could be reasonably.
Let's see in April.
Yeah, sure. For sure. But they could.
I'm kidding.
But the fact that that's the conversation we're having, I think is wonderful. That Matisse Thybulle is like competing for like a 10th man role as opposed to being in the starting lineup. Right. Like I think that is huge, that there is now competition at the bottom of kind of the rotation. I think that is outstanding for them going into the season. I think we're going to wrap
you've
up.
You've got me amped for some Sixers basketball more so than I was 20 minutes ago.
Next week, we got preseason games. It started.
I'll be down there for the first couple of games. Kyle Newbeck will be on his honeymoon during the beginning of the Sixers season. So I'll be covering some games. Congrats to Kyle. I will see you down there for some Sixers talk.
Yeah. It sounds like his honeymoon is going to be a blast too. He was telling me about it on Media Day. Nice, seems like it's going to be fun. So good for Kyle and good for his fiance. That's wonderful. Because there's never a good time to like, it's.
There's never a good time to do anything as a sports writer.
Yes.
The
window is this. That's like, even like when we were like, not to get too personal, but like me and my fiance, we planned our son. There was no good time to do it. I mean, it's so hard with this kind of thing. And so like it actually wound up being okay. It was, he was due early December, decided to come out late November. And it worked out, right? Like it was okay. Like I didn't miss much. I missed a couple weeks. It was not too bad. But I guess we can end it on some Flyers talk, but like what do we even say? They started camp, they had a preseason game. Carter Hart's already friggin' hurt. What the frig?
The friggin' Flyers. That's the Flyers segment every show.
What is happening with the friggin' Flyers this week? What
that just sounds. What's happening with the friggin' Flyers sounds like I just saw one of my friends from South LA for the first time in like a couple months.
No, 100%. Let's call this segment every week. What the frig with the Flyers? Because it's got to be the frig. Because the friggin' it's got to be the frig. That's the Philly thing. Yeah, I don't even know what to dissect. They're hurt. They're so banged up. They're playing preseason games. Great stuff. Carter Hart, like I mentioned, is already out. They said it's day-to-day. We'll see what happens. We don't lower body, whatever. No one knows. I did see that they said Sean Couturier's injury, there is optimism that it's actually only going to be a few weeks, whereas some people were speculating it was like season-ending or maybe even career-ending, where it is only going to be a few weeks. So that's promising, but still, just not a lot to be excited about in Flyers land right now.
Okay, this is what I have. One of my best friends from college is a Flyers number one guy. Loves all four teams, but Flyers is his number one. Truly one of the sickest human beings I've ever met.
He
sends me a lot of hockey stuff in our Instagram DM chats. So he sends me one from this hockey account. It says, Gavin McKenna, the first overall pick from the 2022 WHL, just happens to be born in December, just happens to still be 14, had 4 assists in his first WHL game when there were still 9 minutes remaining in the game. He is draft eligible in 2026. They might inadvertently still be tanking for him by that time. I think I didn't hear about this guy until 6:43 p.m. yesterday, but I think we could just full the next couple of years, and then we get Gavin McKenna, and we being the Flyers and the city of Philadelphia and Flyers fans, rather.
2026 McKenna. Yeah. Tank it for McKenna. Okay. I like it. That's where we're at right now.
I was ahead of the curve on it. And if he stinks, I was just joking.
I don't even know who the guy is this year who is like, I don't know if there is, if there's like that transcendent tank guy in the hockey draft this year. I don't know who that guy is. Maybe that'll be our homework assignment that we'll have to figure out if that guy exists.
The guy just sent me a hockey video. So now I'm replying, talking about Gavin McKenna on a podcast as we speak. Mentioned you're a sicko, but not by name to protect yourself.
Yes. Hey, if he wants to come on and talk Flyers, he can feel free.
No, I'd like to keep my job.
Love it. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up right there. But I do think that's the most productive Flyers thing we had is that we now have a new Flyers segment called What the Frig with the Flyers. For Seamus Clancy, I am Paul Hudrick. This is the friggin' Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast on the SB Nation Podcast Network. Please rate, download, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We will be on back next week to dissect Eagles Jaguars, and that should be a fun one this weekend. We're both looking forward to it. Until then, we will talk to you guys next week.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.